are back on Dateline Washington. This is the Radio America Network. I'm Greg Corumbus. Thanks for being with us. My next guest in this edition is Nicole Gelinas, a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a contributing editor to the Institute's City Journal. She has recently written an opinion piece suggesting that Congress take the time to ask important questions to the Bush administration's chief policymakers to make sure that whatever bailout package is finally approved on Capitol Hill is actually the one that best addresses the situation. And Nicole, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Greg. Good to be on.
One of the things you seem to be concerned about is that while it is important to do this in a timely fashion, that it's being rushed to some extent. How are we seeing that, and what is the impact of that?
Right. I think we're seeing the results of that today. The Treasury and the Democratic leadership in the White House, of course, did not take enough time to make sure that this bill was acceptable to the membership. And you see the results of the market decline in light of the bill's failure on the first vote. And one problem, I think, with the bill in its current form is that there's no way to know if this is not just going to contribute to market uncertainty rather than help the markets to recover. I mean, unless the Treasury is going to buy up every single bad asset, which the $700 billion is not enough to do, you still need vulture investors to come in here and buy some of these assets from banks. And now these vulture investors have to worry about, you know, if the government starts buying these things, what happens when the government stops buying them? It's a whole new risk for them that could actually mean it takes more time to figure out what these things are actually worth.
In your opinion piece, Nicole, you not only mentioned the fact that Congress needs to take the time to have a thorough discussion of this issue, given the amount of money and the significance of this package, but you also talk about a number of pivotal questions that need to be asked and really haven't necessarily to this point. Go ahead and outline for our listeners what those questions are.
Sure. I think one important question is, what do they expect this bill to do in terms of opening up the credit markets? Now, clearly, everybody realizes that having credit markets that are essentially closed, meaning not very much new lending is going on at all to good quality people and companies, that's something that's not sustainable and has to be fixed. But you see intimations out there that some politicians and constituencies, including home builders, mortgage lenders, and so forth, seem to think that we want to go back to the way things were 3 years ago, when anybody can get credit at a cheap price. And the reality is, it's much better for the economy if credit does pull back severely. You know, people earning six figures can't buy a $2 million house. People earning the low five figures can't buy a $500,000 house. People have far too much in home equity debt, credit card debt, student loan debt, and all of the rest. And this idea that this bill can fix what is a necessary correction and turn that around, I think if people are expecting that, they're going to be very disappointed, and then we could be back here with another bill.
And so from the way you've monitored this situation, how well has the administration addressed these important questions? Have they had a cursory explanation? Have they pretty much avoided them? How do you view their handling of this?
I would say they've avoided them altogether. We haven't seen much substantive discussion about what's in this bill. For example, you see the Treasury saying one of the reasons that we need this bill is that all of these bad assets that these banks and other financial institutions have on their books, they're worth a lot more than the current market prices would dictate. But there's no evidence that that's true. The reality is, you know, even though it might sound crazy to say that a mortgage-backed security is only worth maybe 22% of what it was once worth, when you think about the fact that home values in much of the country went up, doubled, in some cases even nearly tripled over the years between 2000 and 2006, they could certainly fall by 50%. And then when you think about the money that it costs to foreclose the house, to keep it maintained before it sells, you can see why the market is assigning such a low value to these securities. And there's no indication that, you know, the government is the one valuing them correctly versus vulture investors who say, look, you know, they're only worth 22%.
Last 20 seconds here, Nicole. What would you encourage the congressional leaders to do moving forward now that obviously they lost the vote today?
I would encourage them to do whatever they're going to do quickly, meaning the end of the day, so that at least the markets can stop being uncertain about the fate of the bill. And I would also encourage the government to keep lending to surviving banks as they're doing, keep guaranteeing the money markets, and people will slowly come back to these credit markets, although it won't happen as quickly as anybody hopes.
Nicole, unfortunately, that'll have to be the last word. Thank you very much, as always, for being with us.
Thank you, Greg.
Nicole Gelinas is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. She's also a contributing editor for the Manhattan Institute's City Journal. That does it for this edition of Dateline Washington, a presentation of the Radio America Network. Remember to join us online also at dateline.radioamerica.org, where you can listen to the program 24 hours a day. Thanks to executive producer Jim Roberts, I'm Greg Corumbus, reminding you to join us again tomorrow at this very same time for Dateline Washington.